Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back in, third hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Adam Vingan from The Athletic drop by at 8:30. We'll get his thoughts on the outdoor game coming to Nashville, the Stanley Cup Final, everything on the table with Adam Vingan coming up later this hour. So looking forward to that conversation. Right now, though, talking Vanderbilt, a game one victory for the Vandy boys last night in Omaha, the College World Series final against Mississippi State. They win 8-2 on really the strength of a heck of a first inning for the Vandy boys offensively. Jack Leiter gives up a home run in the top of the first, and he thought, oh boy, it's going to be a little hairy for Vandy. That crowd was overwhelmingly in favor of Mississippi State. It seemed like the entire city of Starkville was in Omaha last night at the College World Series. Jack Leiter gives up a home run. Vanderbilt's down 1-0. And then Enrique Bradfield gets on base for Vanderbilt in the bottom of the first. And it all starts to unravel from there for Mississippi State starter Christian McLeod. He allows four. He hits two Vanderbilt batters with pitches. And he's out of the game two-thirds of the way through the first inning. And then Jason Gonzalez hits a 3-1 bomb to put Vanderbilt up 7-1 in the bottom of the first inning. And you give Jack Leiter a 6-run lead. More often than not, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. And Vanderbilt was. They cruised to an 8-2 win last night. A crazy start to that game, Joe. And it got to the point out there where I kind of felt bad for Christian McLeod, the Mississippi State starter. In the bottom half of that first inning, he lost control, and then kind of felt like the moment got to him a little bit, and he could never really just corral it and bring it back in. At that point, it was too late. Mississippi State was really done before they ever began last night.
Yeah, I mean, that was a game that I think, you know, Vanderbilt had to feel like it had to get because it had Leiter on the mound. I mean, that's a pitching mismatch. Leiter McLeod, although McLeod certainly has been better than that. You know, I mean, he's a 4.5 ERA guy. He's given him a lot of good innings this year. Has not been great lately. Kind of felt bad for McLeod, you know, like, I mean.
Didn't get much support after the game either.
Lamonis comes out and just like, give me the ball. Here's the last. The last line of Lamonis' presser last night is, it's really hard when you fail on this stage. Talking about McLeod, like, geez, man. I hope he gets another, like, inning or two somewhere in there, like maybe Wednesday and, you know, does
well.
Like,
he might have to come back in there and pitch.
Well, that's the one benefit of a two-thirds inning of an outing, although he pitched, like, he had, like, 38 pitches. But still, I mean, you've got that arm maybe available to you in you know, whatever may happen Wednesday. But great job by Vanderbilt, you know, jumping on a situation. And CJ Rodriguez, big time. Obviously Gonzalez, that's the big shot that just blew it open. But, you know, great job by Bradfield to get that walk. I think it was 0-2 or at least 1-2, and he, you know, gets the walk, and they just that was a really great inning of offense from them. And most of the game, they looked like what they've looked like a lot of this tournament and a lot of this trip to Omaha. They have not been very effective at the plate.
I mean, they finished with 5 hits.
Yeah.
They scored 8 runs, finished with 5 hits in the game. And, you know, outside of the first inning, I think it was either like the 7th or 8th inning before they had another hit again in the game. So it's not like this was some consistently great offensive performance for Vanderbilt, but I mean, look, you hang up seven runs at all in a game with Jack Leiter, you're probably going to be in good shape. You do it in one inning, I mean, it's just downhill from there at that point.
Right. Now, you get five walks, you know, in that lineup, which is good. You get, like, Isaiah Thomas comes back into the lineup. He gets you a big hit, an RBI. He also gets a great defensive play in right field. Carter Young, you know, 7-2 to 8-2, whatever. But just to serve one out there and get a hit, it's been so long for him, you know, since that home run in the first game in Omaha against Arizona. Big deal, because I really did think that maybe Carter Young was about to be moved down that lineup. Just based on, I mean, it's hard when your number two hitter is not producing at all, not getting, you know, moving you guys over. Just, I mean, they're counting heavily on Carter Young to do a lot for this team, but I think that's a big deal for him. So they're beyond just the big first inning. I mean, overall, there's some positive signs, but they're going to have to probably tonight really produce, I would think, just based on the fact that obviously they're pitching a freshman. I think I'm quite sure it'll be Christian Little tonight. And then you just don't know what you're going to need offensively. But I would think quite a bit.
Well, it's interesting. And look, what I'm about to say, I don't think has a whole lot to do with Vanderbilt struggling at the plate, even though they broke out of it in the first inning last night. But my goodness, I mean, the umpiring in this College World Series is awful. I mean, it's so bad. And I understand that you can expect the difference between Major League Baseball umpires and what they're seeing and what they're calling and the way they're calling the game and umpires in college baseball. I expect there to be a difference there. That's fine. But, I mean, they've been so consistently bad. Like, I don't know who the umpire was last night and what his name was, but the guy behind the plate last night calling balls and strikes, I thought it was atrocious last night.
Steve Mattingly.
There you go. And
great,
it's
great last name.
Yeah, great last name. But it's been that way. I mean, and there's far too much of the, hey, the count is 2-0, so anything, you know, remotely in the stratosphere of this plate, I'm calling a strike. Like, there was an at-bat last night where Bradfield had a 2-0 count. I want to say it was in, like, the third or fourth inning. It's a 2-0 count. There's a ball about a foot off the plate on the outside, and it's called a strike. It's 2-1 instead of 3-0 at that point. It completely changes the at-bat. He's got to protect on the next pitch in order to avoid going down or going 2-2 at that point, rather than being 3-0. And he ends up either struck out or he got out on the play. I can't remember what happened. But, it's just stuff like that that completely changes the entire at-bat, which I get it. It's baseball. You expect it to a certain degree. But my eyes have been opened as to how bad the umpiring has been in this College World Series.
Yeah.
They spent 2 minutes last night trying to figure out whether or not a pitch hit a guy in the foot.
Yeah, I know. And it was – he saw it. He called it. Obviously, Lemonis comes out and complains about it. But, the strike zone in particular – the thing is, I feel like for most of the night, it was pretty much the same strike zone. But then it's randomly, someone gets squeezed on something or, like you said, the random just – there was one at bat. Actually, it was a strikeout for Leiter where there was one high and outside and low and inside. And I'm like, if those are both strikes, like it's the biggest strike zone in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
Like, one of them can be a strike. But there's no way both of them
are.
They're
calling some breaking balls that are being caught at the letters, but that's not where they're crossing the plate. It's unbelievable.
I'll say another thing on that, I agree with you. It's not been great. I'll say also that C.J. Rodriguez is outstanding at framing pitches.
Yeah.
He's really good. Young player. What kind of a cool little item last night, by the way, that Pudge Rodriguez actually reached out to him. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's not bad.
You want to be a great defensive catcher. There's a pretty good guy to hear from.
I don't know how I got rolling down that part of this, talking about Vanderbilt's win last night, but I just kept watching the game and being like, man, if I was Tim Corbin, if I was one of these coaches, I'd be thrown out of every game. I would be thrown out of every game in the College World Series. That's the only thing that was crossing my mind last night.
Tony Vitello can feel your pain.
Yes. Yes, he can.
He almost was.
Apparently, all you got to do is throw a clipboard, and I think that's grounds for ejection. So
from the third base umpire, yeah.
That guy actually got a full-time job, by the way. Did you see where he went?
No.
Kivett. Yeah, because he was a volunteer assistant. Yeah.
Houston, wasn't it?
It was
I think Houston ended up hiring him.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So, see, it didn't hurt him. So, good for you, Ross.
Watch a lot of Houston games next year then. Just get tossed every game. But, no, a wonderful performance last night from Vanderbilt. And, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show, but I think it bears repeating. Jack Leiter, one of the things we wondered about heading into the postseason was, all right, he's been great in the regular season for the most part. He's had his ups and downs. But the stuff is there. You know he's going to be a really good pitcher at the major league level. You know he's going to be a high draft pick. Can he handle things well when the moments get bigger and when the stage gets brighter? I think the answer to that so far through the regional, the super regional, and now through two games of action for him in the College World Series, I think the answer unequivocally is yes. Another great performance from him last night. Even though I didn't think he had his best stuff last night, still – pretty good performance from Jack Leiter on the mound last night for Vandy.
I mean, basically a one-year career at Vandy because of how last year went. I mean, he looked great early last year pitching before the season got canceled. But knowing that you were just going to have this one opportunity to be in this tournament, to try to get to Omaha, and then to perform in Omaha, that's some pressure. Not to mention just the pressure of, you know, all these scouts and GMs are watching you. And look – is it that important if you're in that position to go like second versus fourth versus sixth? I mean, maybe not, but still, there's a lot of pressure on you. People wondering, can you hack it at this level? And man, he came through just, I mean, flying colors. He was so good in this tournament. And, you know, if Vanderbilt gets one more win, that's a guy who, for as brief as his career was, you know, they're going to remember him, and they're going to remember that Rocker Leiter year for sure. Yeah. Because you just don't have that in this sport very often at all. I mean, it's a rarity. And if Vanderbilt can take that to a championship, then there will be wondering about what could have been in 2020. But pretty impressive stuff if they can finish it off. And he has stepped up, and that was the bigger question. You knew Rocker would. We've seen it before. But Leiter, man. He's got a big career ahead of him.
This Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Saturday night, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Friday morning at 9:45. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on Vanderbilt, one win away from their second consecutive national championship. What has to happen tonight? With maybe a little bit more usage in the bullpen to happen for Vanderbilt to capture their second consecutive national title. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Adam Vingan from The Athletic dropping by at 8:30, we'll get the latest on the Predators with him for this offseason, the expansion draft a few weeks away, and some big news on the NHL events front yesterday. The Predators getting some outdoor hockey coming their way next season at Nissan Stadium. We'll talk about all that coming up here in about 10 minutes or so with Adam Vingan at 8:30. Right now, talking Vanderbilt, one win away from their second consecutive national title, their third title since 2014. And Joe, you were talking earlier in the show, if they're able to get this done in the next two games, that puts them in some pretty elite territory in the SEC. LSU with six national championships, the most in the SEC. No other team has more than two. So Vanderbilt, an opportunity to begin to separate themselves even more from some other teams in the pecking order of the SEC.
Yeah, and then they'd be at 60%. In Omaha, which, I mean,
you'll
take that. I mean, it's five. You know, it's five appearances. There's a lot of programs in the SEC with as many or more. But that's five in the last 10 tournaments, and then it would be three in the five appearances. And I don't know what else says clutch better than that. You know, I mean, that's some big-time stuff. LSU has 6 and 18 appearances, and, of course, five with Skip Bertman. You know, it's funny, LSU was like the – because some people look at Vanderbilt like new money. Oh, yeah, Vanderbilt, had Johnny come lately?
Oh, yeah.
And that's what LSU was in the 90s. Which, of course, now they are this – I mean, that built this tradition that they still have, where Jay Johnson this week gets hired from Arizona and says he's going to the Yankee Stadium of college baseball. I mean, that's still the foundation for, you know, what they are today. But I was surprised looking through this that Vanderbilt would have more than any other SEC program not named LSU if they win one more game this week.
Yeah.
That's a bit surprising.
That's surprising to me, too. I mean, I thought South Carolina. I thought Florida in that conversation as well. So it is surprising.
You know what it would also mean?
What's that?
Well, it would mean that Mississippi State would now be 0-13.
Yeah.
Now, very for people who follow college baseball, very very well known, very much discussed, Florida State 23
yeah.
appearances in Omaha, never won the thing. But Mississippi State would now be number 2 on that list. So
it's not over yet.
It's not over yet. I'm saying would.
I know.
I mean, and I, you know, like those guys on the broadcast last night, I mean, I would tend to agree. It's like they're going to win one. You know, you get, I mean, this is their third straight trip there. I mean, it's an incredible fan base. Hey, I mean, they've got tremendous stuff. They got a lot going for them. Their home field is among the best out there. But it also becomes that, you know, it's just like, I think it happened to Florida State probably. There's probably a couple of those teams on the back end of the 23 that hurt it so much that it probably hurt them.
Yeah.
So this would be, I mean, Mississippi State, if they win two more games and they win this and they finally get one in their 13th appearance and they do it at Vanderbilt's expense, it's got to be the greatest moment in Mississippi State sports history, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like being number one or whatever
for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks with Dak. I mean, like, what else would be in there? I don't know. You tell me.
And they would no longer be one of the three. I think it's there's only three Power Five schools that have never won a national championship in anything.
Right.
They're one of those three. They'd no longer be on that list.
And they almost, of course, did in women's basketball. So that would be the number one. I think that's probably easily number one now.
Yeah. Yeah,
to get that close, but to actually do it and finally win a championship. And yeah, under these circumstances, in Vanderbilt's face.
With that crowd there. I mean, yeah. That's the thing, too, is like they've got so many people there. Just my eyeballs watching this as the game began last night, my immediate thoughts like, man, that place is like 85% Mississippi State. I mean, they showed Al Leiter sitting down, and he's just surrounded by Mississippi State fans. I wonder how many of those people actually knew who he was. I'm sure they did by the end of the game. But I was interested, like, would the cowbells, would they drown out the Whistler? That did not happen yesterday. You heard that Whistler coming through loud and clear. Even found his way onto the broadcast with Carl Ravage and company talking about it on the broadcast.
Yeah, they're not big fans.
Not very big fans of it.
It's hard to find big fans of it. You can find defenders of it who I think probably are just like, I think a lot of people who defend it are just like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you're allowed to make a noise with your mouth in public. So either you just embrace it or at least live with it, or what's the point?
Well, Ravage was talking about how he's never noticed it, which is just unbelievable to me.
That is interesting. It's unbelievable that you didn't at first. To me, it's just a quick trip to just, it's background noise. But at first, you're like, what is that? Huh? You know, like the first time I was at a Vanderbilt baseball game a few years ago and I heard that. I mean, I at first was just like, what's going on here? And then it's like, oh, that's the way. Then you hear the story, fine. It's totally background noise to me. But yeah, for that to be the thing at first, that's interesting. Those other, yeah, one of those guys in the booth was like, that's not the same for me, Carl.
Yeah.
But see, Mississippi State was actually, first of all, I didn't hear cowbells. Did you hear cowbells?
Not really.
Are you not allowed to bring them in?
May not be.
But
that'd be great.
But they did have
everywhere
a chance.
Adopt that policy.
Well, they did, yeah. They did have a chant ready to sort of counter the whistle, and
yeah.
And you heard it early, and then you get the 7-run inning, and they're like,
their spirits
are
dead.
The hangover kicks in quickly, you know?
Kyle, on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, the only defenders of the Whistler are Vandy fans. It's an absolute ridiculous thing that's annoying. People get real fired up about these people. These whistlers.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's a couple guys who whistle. I mean,
it's pretty annoying.
I don't think it's awesome by any means.
Wait, annoying. There's more than one?
Oh, there's two.
Yeah. Oh, there's two. Wow. Yeah. Like the JFK thing all over again.
Yeah.
Is there another whistler?
Yeah.
Like
the whistler in the grassy knoll?
Yeah. This is news to me.
Well, yeah, believe me. Like, you know, having worked with Adam Sparks at the Tennessean, and he has done extensive reporting and writing on the Whistler.
He knows everything there is to know.
So, like, the Whistler, who is more, like, out there on social media, you know, there's that guy. Apparently, they're both there. And then there's one who's less out there but actually is a better interview, okay? So there's a lot going on here. But, again, I think the biggest problem with it is – like, we spend too much time talking about a couple old dudes who like to whistle between pitches.
They made the national broadcast last night.
I understand. I mean, it. That's like, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, that's what I don't like.
Yeah.
Like, this is you are watching a program, like, potentially here you may be watching a dynasty. I mean, you're watching one of the best programs in college sports for sure. And we're talking about a dude with admittedly a fantastic mullet who has just an incredible passion for whistling.
Undaunting passion for whistling.
Just relentless whistling.
I have confirmation from a source. They are not allowed to bring cowbells into the College World Series. There you go.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I should have known that. But I was waiting to hear that last night, waiting to hear some cowbell counteracting. But they had a chant.
Well, they could definitely bring them into the football games.
Oh, yeah.
When they got a first down last year, which was rare under Mike Leach, you heard them. They were just – those cowbells were going crazy out there.
What, was it Mike Leach? He got off his little private plane. He's like, cowbell.
Yeah.
He did not have the enthusiasm required there.
I got a texture that says, I've watched so many Vanderbilt games, I don't even notice the Whistler anymore.
Well, I'm the same way.
Meanwhile, Matt from Camden on the text line says, the Whistler is the worst thing in any sport.
The worst thing in all sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you've got, like, awful human behavior. You know.
Well, there is that.
People being, like, arrested. Yeah, but yes, the whistling. The whistling is the worst thing in sports. I don't know. People get very emotional about it. It quickly tunes out for me. It's not going away. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
It'll be right back out there tonight.
And it again, that seven-run inning, all of a sudden, it was
coming in loud and clear halfway through that inning. That is for sure.
He was kind of whistling a little bit here and there, or one of them. You know, Vanderbilt was pitching, too,
which
I found interesting. That was a little bit of a, from my understanding.
The deviation of tactics
like
there.
Just a throwing it in.
Yeah.
Or it's a third whistler.
Well, it could be. Oh, could be goodness. Added to the mix there.
They could have an army of whistlers. You got to try to, you know, counteract the 80 million Mississippi State fans over there.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Lots happening on the Predators front, the NHL front as well. We'll get to all that with Adam coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, you hear that music? It can only mean one thing here on the program. That means we are about to be joined by our good friend Adam Vingan, and we do that now on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing okay. Had to spend last night in a hotel because our HVAC was leaking.
Jeez.
Hopefully it'll be taken care of today, but we had a little staycation last night. Shout out to the Fairfield by Vanderbilt. Very cozy.
That's good.
Are you stowing away on a train right now? You have like a little knapsack on a stick? Doesn't it sound like a train?
I don't know what's going on.
I'm in the car.
Oh, okay. But it just sounded like I heard like train tracks. Sorry.
Well, I haven't crossed any train tracks right now.
That's good.
At least not yet.
Well, that's good. Adam, we appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Hopefully your HVAC situation is cured as quickly as possible.
Yeah, perfect timing.
That's
not
right.
Not like it's like the hottest it's ever been in the history of existence.
That's right. So, Adam, let's start with the news yesterday of the Stadium Series game coming to Nashville, Nissan Stadium. Predators hosting the Lightning on February 26th, 2022. Your reaction to the Predators landing a game like this? What does this mean for the team? What does this mean for the city? And what do you anticipate the environment being like at Nissan Stadium when this game between the Lightning and the Predators takes place?
Well, it's very exciting. Certainly since the Predators did a fabulous job of hosting the 2016 NHL All-Star Game, every time Gary Bettman has been in town for one reason or another, he's always asked, when will Nashville host an outdoor game? And Gary Bettman, you know, being as lawyerly as he is, well, you know, always, you know, doesn't always, you know, kept the option open. Talked about how he wanted Nashville to have an opportunity to host an outdoor game, and certainly the idea of an outdoor game here in Nashville against Tampa would be very exciting. From my perspective, and Joe can speak to this, and Robbie, you can speak to this as well, the sight lines and the press box at Nissan Stadium will be much better than they were at Cotton Bowl Stadium for the Winter Classic. So at least we'll be closer to the ice. But look, it's very exciting. I'm sure Nashville, as it always does, will do a great job of hosting. I'm sure the Predators will go all out and making it an incredible environment, as they often do. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun. February seems so far away, but the summer's already flying by. It's almost July, so it'll be here before we know it.
Have you had any angry, like, Canes fans react to you in any form? Because it feels like people from that region of the country really are angry at people from our area right now.
Yeah, what did people from Nashville do to people from Raleigh recently? I'm not sure what's going on there. I'm kidding, of course. I read, Don Waddell, the GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, put out a statement yesterday in which he said that, you know, the Hurricanes made the decision to postpone their outdoor game until not next season, but the season after, where hopefully things will be back to normal even more so, and there won't be any sort of restrictions that need to be in place at Carter-Finley Stadium where the game was supposed to be held. I believe the Hurricanes were supposed to play the Capitals at that game at the NC State football stadium. So I have not heard from angry Canes fans, though I know there are plenty of people from the Triangle area that are mad specifically at you, Joe, because, you know, you're the face of Vanderbilt.
That's right.
Yeah, Tim Corbin.
That's right. I hate their team, yes. And actually, though, but you probably butt heads with those people a lot because, as you know, almost everybody who lives in that state actually does hate Duke. It's all the kids from New Jersey who love Duke who go to Duke.
I remember a couple of years ago when the Predators were playing the Hurricanes, I believe on a Sunday afternoon, and the day before I flew into Raleigh and Duke was playing that day. They were playing Florida State at Florida State, and that was the game where Cam Reddish hit the game-winning three at the buzzer to beat Florida State, and I was watching the game at the hotel bar, and I think I was the only person that was happy at the bar when Cam Reddish hit that shot, despite being, 30 minutes away from campus. So
that sounds about right.
I know all too well.
Sounds about right. Adam Vigan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Adam, the Stanley Cup Final underway. Tampa Bay wins in Game 1, and it's been awesome to watch Shea Weber to be able to play up until this point and to get to this point. An uphill battle for the Canadiens now, down 1-0 to Tampa Bay. How do you see the rest of this series playing out? How difficult of a climb is this going to be for Montreal to get this done against the defending Stanley Cup champions?
Well, it's good to know that Shea Weber hasn't lost that game face when they were introducing starting lineup last night.
It was unbelievable. You know, he stared a hole through my television.
Intense as ever, and I enjoyed, you know, his press conference with Carey Price on Media Day. You know, again, Shea Weber, never one to go down the big picture road when it comes to answering questions. Some things never change. Today, by the way, the 5-year anniversary of the Shea Weber PK Subban trade. I'm sure you've already discussed that.
It's hard to believe.
Those who weren't aware, I know you were at Five Guys, Robbie, eating your burger.
I was.
When that went down. But anyway, the game last night was good for two periods. But then Tampa imposed its will in the third period. And look, I think what the Canadiens have done in this postseason, it's been great. You know, it reminds me a lot of what the Predators did 4 years ago. I have this strange feeling in the pit of my stomach that this Stanley Cup final might be over sooner rather than later, especially if Tampa can do what it did in the third period last night. Now, they scored a power play goal late in the game, you know, the Canadiens, I believe, entering the Stanley Cup final, had scored more shorthanded goals than they had allowed power play goals. And I don't think they had allowed a shorthanded goal since the first round against the Maple Leafs. And we know how deadly the Lightning's power play is. So if the Canadiens can't, you know, be as incredible in the penalty kill as they've been in the first three rounds, you know, this series could be over very quickly. So, you know, I expect the Canadiens to win at least one game in this series. But if you were to tell me Tampa wins in five, I wouldn't be shocked.
All right, let's talk local professional hockey team, Adam. You had another very compelling fan survey, good participation. Most of the answers didn't surprise me a ton. It seemed like you were a little bit confused by the whole, like, David Poile lack of confidence, but David Poile can't fire him. But I was blown away by this, like, no, we don't want an owner who, like, actually – or like someone from the ownership group who actually speaks on behalf of the team ever. I don't get it. What am I missing? Is it just the people in fear of like some Jerry Jones thing? I don't understand.
Yeah, that was very confusing to me too, especially considering in the early part of the season when the Predators were struggling, all I heard was, why isn't ownership talking about this? Ownership needs to speak. And as you know, I made an attempt to speak to ownership, and Sean Henry spoke on the group's behalf. You know, Sean and David Poile are the public faces of the front office. That is their that's the organization's decision. But I guess that might have something to do with it, Joe, like this idea that when we think of visible owners, we think of Jerry Jones. And I'm trying to think of some, we think of like Eugene Melnick in Ottawa.
Yeah.
We think of, you know, we think of bad owners who seem to put their hands, you know, in too many things versus being hands off. But especially at this time of the Predators, you know, at this point of the Predators, I don't know what you want to call it, trajectory, I do think it would be good to have an owner who speaks directly to fans, because, you know, I remember asking David Poile, you know, at some point early in the season, how does ownership feel about the direction of the team? And he said, well, that's not something I could answer. You'd have to ask ownership about that. Well, I tried, and they didn't want to talk. So, you know, there's only so much you can get out of David and Sean when it comes to the direction of the franchise. I mean, I think, you know, having, you know, Herb Fritch, who is the chairman of the ownership group, be more accessible to fans would be beneficial to them. Perhaps it was the wording of the question. The way I phrased the question was, would the Predators benefit from having a more visible owner who spoke directly to fans? Maybe, and it's sort of the same thing with the David Poile question you referenced, Joe. The question I asked was, should David Poile have been removed as GM? And I think a lot of people who said no felt that because David has been, you know, such an ambassador for the organization, that he deserved to go out on his terms versus being removed, fired. But it did kind of confuse me considering how many people over the course of the season expressed anger toward David, but voted against having him removed.
Adam, last thing for you here. Elliot Friedman came out yesterday with his 31 Thoughts piece that he does for Sportsnet. And in that piece, talked about a name that he's hearing is Nashville's Victor Arvidsson, who has 3 years left at $4.25 million, potentially being a trade candidate. What do you think of that? What do you think of the idea of the Predators exploring a trade with Victor Arvidsson this offseason? And if that's a route that the Predators go, what do you think they could get back for a player like Victor Arvidsson?
Well, I think it's a good idea, personally. And, you know, I've been writing things to that effect since the season ended. We all believe that this core group has reached its expiration date. You could argue that it reached its expiration date last year or even 2 years ago. But, you know, Victor Arvidsson, I believe his best days are behind him. I don't see him returning to the 34-goal player that he was a couple of years ago. Clearly, his speed has been zapped, perhaps as a result of the injuries that he has sustained in recent seasons. You know, I did some research early in the season about, you know, his scoring off the rush. Not only is he not scoring off the rush, he's creating far fewer chances off the rush. So it's not like he's still producing rush scoring chances and not scoring. He's not even producing the chances. And that's what made him so successful. So considering the trade values of the other players in the core, which I don't think are very high, I think Victor Arvidsson is a player that could realistically, you know, be of interest to other teams. His cap hit is not prohibitive. I believe he has 3 years left on the deal, which isn't great, but manageable.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know what you're looking for. I mean, I don't know what you could be looking for Victor Arvidsson. You know, perhaps a mid-level prospect, a mid-round draft pick. It's not going to be, you know, a trade that nets you a top six forward. So, you know, perhaps the Predators could get for Arvidsson what they might have gotten for someone like Granlund at the trade deadline had they gone down that road. You know, I think that's sort of a futures deal. Personally, I think the value of trading Arvidsson is getting something for him, making your expansion draft decision less complicated, and demonstrating to the fan base that what's been going on the past couple of years is unacceptable by shaking up the core.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time on short notice to join us this morning.
All right. Well, I'll be here waiting for the HVAC man.
That's right.
I didn't have anything else to do.
That's right.
Good luck.
Good luck on that front. Adam Vingan from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Adam had to say. Take your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the home for Nashville Sounds baseball. Tonight, the Sounds take on the Louisville Bats, the AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds. The pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 6:50, and first pitch is at 7:05. Nashville Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza Company. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Adam Vingan for joining us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. Gentry is in Omaha, so looking forward to having that conversation with him about the Vandy boys. One win away from another national championship. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Frank texting in, still waiting for a Rex Road versus Vingan angry fan voice face off. What does that mean?
The fans! Oh, I think that's what that, Vingan, is that a Vingan thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, give me elaborate a little bit. I'm up for any sort of battle with Vingan, especially ripping Duke battle.
Yes,
with Vingan.
Although I'm surprised Vingan's not getting more hate from the Raleigh, North Carolina faithful, based on the tweet yesterday that the Predators are hosting the outdoor game. Apparently, Carolina fans upset about everything at the moment. Anything Nashville related, they are very upset.
But they're saying, well, we didn't actually want it this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was our plan all along.
So some clarification there. That's not really helping the outrage, though.
Yeah, right. It doesn't. Yeah, facts don't matter much for some.
Oh, boy. What do you think of the idea out there that Adam just threw out there, that trading Arvidsson is a good idea? The Predators should do it. You're not going to get a ton for him, but it signals to the fan base that what's happened the last couple of years is not acceptable. You're making some changes to the core group, maybe freeing up a little bit of money along the way. What do you think the idea of Adam Vingan on board with the Predators trading Victor Arvidsson?
Well, I don't disagree unless it leads to a lesser product on the ice next year. I mean, to me, I want to know everything else that goes with trading him, you know? And, of course, this is one of those things with Arvidsson where if you keep him, you know, it's like the Murphy's Law thing. It's like keep him and he'll keep declining. You trade him and he'll go out and have 38 goals next year. I mean, but aside from that, I mean, you got to have a really, I think, as much a feel as you can have, if you're David Poile, for how his health is and where he's going with that. And then, man, I don't know. I think there'd be a lot of underwhelmed people if you, like, get a third-round pick for Victor Arvidsson. And then next year, I mean, even last year, in his diminished, condition at times, he still was a guy who had some important moments for that team. So, to me, that signals, one, probably more confidence in Tomasino. But then again, what else is happening? Are you just getting weaker as a hockey team to dump a little bit of salary? Is this something you have to do to be able to get Granlund? Are you going to be able to dump any of that? On its own, I mean, I think it could be part of the equation. Sure.
I wonder, I mean, the idea of making the expansion draft decision a little easier, I mean, you're running out of time to get that one done. If it's going to happen, that's going to need to happen pretty quickly here for the Predators to get that done before the expansion draft deadline comes about. Do I think that's possible? Yes. If I'm a team trading for Victor Arvidsson, my preference would probably be to do that after the expansion draft.
Yeah.
At this point.
You've got your own people to protect. You don't want to add someone to that list.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens on that front, because if he's still on this team and he's not traded before then, I mean, I would think if you're going to want to trade him, you got to protect him at that point, because my guess would be, and I don't know this, but my guess would be if Victor Arvidsson is available for that price, 3 years left, $4.25 million, if he's available in the expansion draft and you're protecting five defensemen, obviously you're protecting Philip Forsberg, maybe you're leaving Johansson and Duchesne exposed, like Arvidsson, I think, would be tempting for Seattle to take at that point, and then you're losing him for nothing.
Exactly. And then he'd end up just like one of those Florida guys in Vegas,
he'd
right?
He'd score 35 yeah, in Seattle.
And,
yep.
He'll go up there and be like everybody's favorite player. So, right. Well, now, could he be the lure for Seattle? Could that be the trade?
Maybe. That's a lot. It's a lot of money to take on. Talking about a lure for either Johansson or Duchesne?
Yeah, can you take on this and this? Thank you.
What would that be? That would be $12.25 million per year for at least the next 3 years.
You got two-thirds of your top line done, though. Come on.
That's true.
No one else will be asking them to take salary. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be in good shape at that point. I don't know. Maybe. That seems like a lot of money for Seattle to take on right away just with one team.
See, interesting, too. So I agree. Like, if you still have him and you go to this expansion draft like this, I think he would be protected because you need to get something for him.
Yep.
But then I wonder if Seattle would just like grab a Sissons if he's unprotected or something like that, right? I mean, that wouldn't
makes
be
a lot of sense.
It wouldn't be bad for them at all.
Would not be bad for them at all. And that's the predicament you're in right now if you're the Predators. Like, if you're going the five defenseman route, which I think they will, you can only protect three forwards. Forsberg's going to be one of them. Who are the other two going to be? I mean, I would think Luke Cunningham's going to be one of them. So you've got Yarncroke, Sissons, Arvidsson, all right there for that last spot to be protected. That's an interesting decision for David Poile.
Right. So,
if I'm Seattle, if Yarncroke or Sissons are exposed, that's pretty tempting to take one of those two guys.
Which is why, again, like if you're David Poile, you need to, and I think will, know what they're doing before it even happens. You're not going to show up that day and be like, I wonder who they'll take. Right? I mean, you're going to do everything you can to make it work in your favor. And if it doesn't, you'll probably have an idea of what they're going to do. But, yeah, then you're going to be, I think, forced to protect Arvidsson.
Adam also came out with a piece this morning at The Athletic, and it's asking the question that we've been asking for a couple of weeks, and that is, how far are the Predators from being a contender for the Stanley Cup, a legitimate contender for the Stanley Cup? And Adam kind of goes through a process here of highlighting different areas about this Predators roster that are close, some that are not close, and enlists the help of Dom Lucision as well from The Athletic. And part of what Lucision found out at the championship teams include most of these qualities, and I'll just read a couple of them off. An elite number one center, a top center behind that center, an elite first-line winger,
two top wingers on each of the two lines after that, an elite number one D-man, and a second number one D-man. Predators have that part covered. They've got an elite number one D-man. They've got a second number one D-man. They may have a third number one D-man as well. So that part, well in hand for the Nashville Predators. The goaltending, you would think, pretty well in hand at this point as well. But it all goes back to the forwards. They do not have an elite number one center. I would argue they don't have an elite first-line winger either. I think Philip Forsberg is a good player. I don't think he's a first-line winger on a good team. So with that in mind, and the Tampa Bay Lightning are a pretty perfect example of this. They're loaded across the board. It's hard to get to that level. I recognize that. It takes a lot of things to break your way. You've got to draft right. You may have to manipulate the salary cap a little bit, as we've seen with Tampa Bay this year as well, which Gary Bettman addressed that yesterday also. At forward, it seems like the Predators pretty significantly off in terms of being a true Stanley Cup contender at this moment, especially if your top guys and those top two centermen don't approach their past career numbers. I do think, to your point, and you brought this up a few times, there's a path to a Stanley Cup without having to have Connor McDavid on your team. Like, there's a way to win without having to have elite guys all over the place. But it takes a whole lot of things going right, and I think that ship has pretty much sailed for the Predators at this point at the forward position. And that's very hard to replicate as they move forward here.
There's a lot of math and a lot of charts in this piece, which is totally right up Vingan's alley. This is good stuff, though. When you read the list, my first reaction is, who the heck has all of this? But there's a couple teams that are all pretty close.
Pretty close.
And the Preds are not. They've got several no's on there. Yeah, and it's all where we know it is. I mean, that's the problem. It's the forward group. So, you go through this, and you feel like they're pretty far away. I guess we already probably felt that way. But it's sort of the question of, can you do the whatever you want to call it, like the soft, like Vingan calls it in this piece, the soft reset. Can that be enough to, some people would say, Montreal, they're in the Cup Final. They got in the playoffs. They're in the Cup Final.
Yep.
If UC Saros is just elite now, is he just elite? Moving forward, that's what he is?
Maybe.
But more likely, the better, safer money is on you're going to need something more significant than that to get where you want to go.
When we come back, we'll get back into Vanderbilt. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean will join us live from Omaha. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.